Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
Kind of heading on, you know, once you pick what you are as your race, you have to then kind of go down the ladder a little bit into the class. So yes. Why don't we talk a little bit about what class is and how that builds onto your race?
Right. So character class is basically what your training is. It's like your job, right? So, you know, we're all humans, I think, and but we have jobs, right? Like you talked about your training in film. I talked about my training in radio and other things. And so this is your job.
So we're both bards.
We're basically both bards because, again, versatility. Because bards are good at versatility. So this is how I think of the jobs, of the classes, is they're broken down pretty easily as either martial or magical. So martial meaning that they are wearing armor, okay. Have a sword or a bow, probably a shield. They're like, get up in your face and fight. And then there's the magical people, which use magic, right? And it kind of divides everything pretty evenly. And so in the martial side, which again, if you're intimidated by any of this stuff, is a great place to start because there's not so many options.
Yeah, so, I've heard a fighter is a really good option.
It is.
Human fighter is
right.
A really good option,
which
for new players.
They actually did a statistic a while back, and the most common class race combo is human fighter.
Oh, really?
Right. Because it's entry level, super easy, but you can make them interesting. So fighters, great thing. Pure combat. They know how to use all the weapons. They can wear any of the armors. They can use a shield. They eventually get more attacks. Every time they say, I attack, they can attack two times, and then three times, and then four times, and five times as they go up in level and get more complicated. They can even... early on, they get a thing where they can actually take an extra turn, another action. Mm-hmm. Action surge is what it's called. And that means they can just take a single action one more time, which if it's, you know, if you can make two attacks every attack action, now you have four attacks, but that bonus, that action surge has a limited use. Mm-hmm. And then they have something like... where they can actually get some health back just by like called a second wind, where they can just kind of like hunker down and like shake it off and gain some hit points back, some health back, and keep going. And so their options don't get really crazy. They're really straightforward. There are options to do that, and I'll talk about that in a second. But it's really straightforward. It's upfront, in the face, keep doing a lot of damage reliably. They don't run out of things. They can always swing their sword a bunch of times. It's really straightforward, but of course, always you can customize it up kind of crazy. And then even on the further side of pure martial prowess is the barbarian. And so the barbarian is like you'd think like the Mongol hordes or the Gauls that Julius Caesar fought, right, in the Gallic Wars. These are people who are very, very martial as well. They can kind of use all the weapons, some of the armor, but they have this kind of innate ability that's fueled by emotion where they don't have to necessarily wear armor. They can actually, there's an equation in there that says your armor is this based on like, I think it's your dex and your constitution.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And that's just your AC because you're just tough. Your armor class through your ability to resist getting hit. And they have the most hit points in the whole game. Their health is based on rolling a d12. And they're the only ones who do that. Even the fighter uses a 10-sided dice. And then they have something called rage, which they can do a limited number of times per day in the game. That gives them bonus to damage. They get more resistance to being beat up. It even sometimes gives them a easier chance to attack or to do even more attacks in a round. And so it's like this fury. It's like the Tasmanian Devil. Mm-hmm. They're basically D&D's Tasmanian Devil, right? And then inside that, too, you have two kind of more like skill and finesse style of martial characters, the rogue and the monk. Mm-hmm. So the rogue, not the rouge, the rogue, they're thieves. They're assassins. those kinds of things, and they're all about dexterity and
they're the sneaky ones, and sneaking
and sleight of hand and pickpockets, and so they have a bunch of skills as well. They're, if you like versatility, they're another great one for that, because their skills, like, hey, I want to pick this guy's pocket, or hey, I want to see if I see anything in this room that determine the success and failure of those kinds of actions, are, can be boosted to an incredible amount, like +9, +12, and you're like level 5, and you're like, why are you so good at this? So they can really specialize in things because of their training. Mm-hmm. And so for them, it's not about emotion, it's not about strength, it's about training. And so they're the ones that, they're really kind of cool feature that they're most known for is their sneak attack. Mm-hmm. And so if they have surprise on somebody, or they're fighting along someone else so that the foe can't focus on just one aggressor, they can actually stab and basically turn the knife. Mm-hmm. And they'll do extra damage.
They do a lot of extra damage.
Yeah, and it doesn't run out. Like, yeah. It's not based on a spell slot or a rage twice a day. It's just you have to be working with friends or have a situation where you can sneak up on them. Mm-hmm. Good thing they're good at sneaking up on people. So yeah. it's if you're really careful, you could be the top damage dealer in your party just by being a rogue, which mm-hmm. is nothing really flashy.
Yeah, one of my first players was a halfling rogue. And so because of his size, he was able to hide very easily. Mm-hmm. And whenever he would hide, he would then have sneak attack. So basically every turn he would attack and then he would hide. And then the next turn he would have sneak attack again. Yes. So he was this the tiniest person in the party, and he was easily doing the most damage.
Yeah, he's just using daggers, which do almost no damage at all. Yeah, exactly.
Slashing at their ankles.
Yeah, like, oh no, my Achilles tendon. And then you have the monks. And when I say monk, don't think the guys who make beer and cheese and put out a Christmas album, right, of Gregorian chants. These guys are more like Shaolin monks. These are your martial artists. Mm-hmm. And so, again, this is about their skill and their discipline. And they also have a thing where they don't need to wear armor. And you can look at a couple of stats to determine what their armor is. And they can make unarmed strikes. Mm-hmm. And so they can actually do more damage sometimes just punching you with their bare or open fist than a fighter could with a longsword. Yeah. And so they're very nimble. And they have these special things called key points, or chi points, if some people call it, where they have this limited pool of points that there's a list of, like, hey, you could do this kind of cool thing, this kind of cool thing, this kind of cool thing. And they're the ones who are going to get the most attacks per turn the quickest, because they can, like, attack, and then spend a key point and attack again, mm-hmm. right? And then as it goes up, it gets even more and more. And so they have this thing, really cool thing called Flurry of Blows, where it's like you're playing Street Fighter, and it's just like boom, 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 boom. And so they're a lot of fun and all of that. Okay, so that's the martial side. There's those four over there. And then in the magic side, it splits again. And so there's the arcane and the divine.
Now, what's the difference between those two terms?
Okay, so
break it down.
So divine, as it would suggest, that their magical ability comes from the gods. It comes from some godly or some deity presence. Mm-hmm. And so the most obvious, and so the arcane comes from learning, book learning.
Okay.
And learning, like Harry Potter, like what's the right motion and words and wand to make this thing float, mm-hmm. right? That's like a wizard. And an arcane magic. But arcane magic taps into something called the weave, which is like, if you like, you know, like ley lines are in like some fantasy mm-hmm. stories, the natural lines of like magic across the globe, just like there's natural lines of magnetism across the globe. They tap into this, and they're manipulating those elements of natural magic in the world mm-hmm. to create and craft them into a certain way, almost like they're playing with the source code of reality to create and craft their spells. Right?
Yeah, I think my favorite lore that I've heard on that is bards, where they're basically tapping into the echo of the voice that spoke everything into existence.
Right.
Which
the
I'm
song
like, just,
of creation.
Just the idea of that is so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like they found the secret chord that pleased the Lord, right? Like mm-hmm. so like that's what they're doing, and it's super awesome. Like I said before, we grew up in church, and so for us we're like, that resonates with us in a very special way. And so we're like, yeah, that's super cool. So don't let me talk too much about bards. I'll get them in a second. Okay. So on the divine side you have the cleric. Okay. They're not filing paperwork. These are priests, okay? And so they are somewhat martial. They can wear some armor and they have some restrictions and they can have pretty good weapons, but really their go-to is every day they pray and they get new spells. And they can choose brand new spells from a list every single day. So they can kit themselves out into different spells every single day. So they can be like sneak, their sneak complement or their damage dealing complement or healing and disease prevention complement. And so it's really cool. Yeah. And they pick a deity or a pantheon, and that also has elements of what do they specialize in. Mm-hmm. And so they're very magically based, but they also can do a lot of things up with the frontline fighters and barbarians and stuff, which is kind of neat. They're actually one of the more versatile characters too that have magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple things that I think are interesting that I learned about clerics, you know, as I was running a game that had one, was I didn't necessarily understand well at first that their powers come from their deity. So they're not just imbued. They can't just always cast this thing. If they're making their deity angry, they might go to cast a spell and it might not work because their deity is like, no, I'm not going to give you the power to do that. So that was something interesting because it nuances the character and or the player in their gameplay. Like if they're doing things that if you worship the god of life and you're going around killing a bunch of people, well, that's not going to be something that makes your god very happy. So they might cut you off. They might not let you cast anymore.
Right, and make you go on a quest to fix that. Now you have this really cool side quest. And so as a DM, this narrative element, because it's not like a game mechanic. It's not a table you roll on to see if you made God angry.
Yeah.
Although I shouldn't write one. But it's more of a narrative thing and where you get a chance to play your character. And so if, you know, you are a cleric of the god of life or the god of knowledge, does that mean keeping and protecting knowledge? Or does that mean distributing knowledge? Mm-hmm. Or does that mean destroying forbidden knowledge or discovering forbidden knowledge? Like what relationship do you have with that aspect or concept of that deity personifies? So they're very interesting. You got a lot of layers in there. So, and then there is this is really interesting. There's a more martial version of the cleric called a paladin that are like basically like fighters that can cast some spells. And they have a really cool thing where they have something called smites, right? So these are paladins smiting the wicked, where they can channel magical energy into their blade to do extra damage and sometimes extra effects. Okay. And so that's why we said the rogue was so powerful, because you've got this extra damage that can come from the paladin, but he's using spell slots, this kind of limited resource every day to do this, and he runs out, but all the rogue has to do is sneak around behind his friend and stab, 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 stab. Mm-hmm. So they're really cool, and they have some really cool like divine powers at certain levels. They just can't get sick anymore.
Well, that's handy.
It is, isn't it? Or they can lay on hands and just give hit points or cure people of disease. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very like kind of
it's
like
very biblical in that
sense.
Yeah,
it really is. Like I think of like was Mother Teresa a paladin? Like, you know, you think of this kind of stuff and you're like, that's actually kind of cool. Like they're these bastions of good and bravery and hope, and they're very sometimes very rigid in what they believe because they hold this very specific line thematically, but at the same time they have this element to them where you could see them crouching over the bed of a sick child and laying hands on them and he's well, and like it makes this like kind of touching moment and you're like, wow, there's a lot you can do with these characters. Mm-hmm. And then you jump over also in the divine side and you have druids. So druids, they will probably worship a deity, but they're more like worshiping creation itself, whether that's plants or animals and those kinds of things. And they're very, very magical as well. They pray to get their spells and their spell slots, but they have a really cool ability where they have something called wild shape, where a couple of times a day, depending on their level, they can just turn into an animal with some restrictions, like they had to have seen it before, or it can't be over a certain like hit point level. They call it a challenge rating, but we'll talk about that later. So like they can turn into a bear or a wolf or an eagle or an elk or a squirrel or a mouse. Like they can be this hulking like a dragonborn and then just turn into a mouse that's real size and sneak into a castle and then just change back and sneak it behind the guard, which is a beautiful image. So they're really cool like that because they have this kind of like affinity and resonance with the natural world that shows up in their magics as well as in their ability to just change into the natural world, which is kind of neat. And there's a slightly martial, more martial version of them called the Ranger, which has some kind of natural, you know, plant, animal-based magics, but they're also typically really good at, like, bow and arrows or wielding two weapons at once and hack. They can get, like, and they have, like, favored terrain. Like, they're really good in forests, but not deserts. And they can be good at killing certain kinds of bad guys, like bad guys that are bigger than them. Or when they have to fight a horde of things, they're good at fighting those kinds of things. And so it's interesting that there's, like, these kind of purely magical versions, and there's a slightly martial version that's adjacent to them in the divine kind of category. And then lastly, you have the arcane. These are the guys who are using kind of the weave of magic to create magical effects. So the top of that list, most obviously, is wizards. This is Merlin, this is Gandalf, Harry Potter, although he might be more of a sorcerer, where they get their magical ability from book learning. Simple as that. They have to carry around a spell book. They study it each day to rememorize those spells, because once they cast the spell, it like leaves their mind. In a way, so that they can't use it again with spell slots and all these kinds of stuff. And so they're actually some of the most frail characters. Like, their hit points are based on a six-sided die as opposed to the barbarian's 12-sided die. And they typically need to keep their best score be intelligence, which isn't going to help them. And they can't wear armor unless they have an ability like being a dwarf, where they just know how to wear armor because that's cultural. They just can't wear armor, and so they're wearing, like, you know, robes, and arrows go really great through robes. Like, there's no protection at all. And they don't know how to use very many weapons. But their magics, like a lot of the magic users, even in the divine category, they have these things called cantrips, which are simple spells that they can cast all day long. They never run out. They don't forget how they're just very fundamental, basic, beginner-level spells, where they can shoot a bolt of fire, or they can create a spectral hand that grabs onto the opponent and drains them of health and keeps them from being able to regenerate. Those kinds of things, or like creating illusions or cleaning their clothes. There's a great spell that's a cantrip called Prestidigitation, and one of its many, many abilities is you can soil or clean a single garment. And I'm like, where is that in my life? That's what I want. And then they have a counterpart called a sorcerer that has a lot of spells too, a lot of the same restrictions, but their magical ability doesn't come from learning. Their magical ability comes from genetics. They are related to something.
So that's
something,
what you were saying, Harry Potter is more of a sorcerer because it's in his blood.
Exactly. Okay. So they're sorcerer wizards.
Gotcha.
Whereas the Sorcerer Supreme, Doctor Strange, isn't a sorcerer. He's definitely a wizard because he had to train and learn and read and all that stuff. So sorcerers, like, the two most common options are they have some kind of connection to the Feywild. We talked about that with the elves before, where there's this wild magic in this other dimension that they're infused with somehow that just gives them magical power. Or the other common option is that there is a draconic bloodline in their bloodline. That way back when somewhere, Grandpappy, he's actually a dragon. Right? And so, and you don't have to be a dragonborn to do that. You could be a human and just one day, like you're one of Xavier's students for X-Men, you just burst out with magic powers. So that's kind of the vibe there. And they have these cool things called sorcery points that's like the monk's key points. That's a small pool of expendable resource along with their spell slots, like always, that they can spend to do cool little extra tricks as they're learning to kind of craft their magic in very unique ways. And then you have the last two arcane classes, which are Bard and Warlock. And they get their magical powers the most kind of fun ways. We talked a little bit about the Bards already. They are in tune with the echo of the song of creation, where they have figured out rhythms and chords and music and even oration that allows them to kind of hijack that source code of reality a little bit, because reality remembers being formed, and they tap into it a bit to create these spell effects. The Bard is also really cool because it's a bit more of a martial version of the wizard. Mm-hmm. So they can use more weapons. They can wear some armor. They have some better abilities. Their hit points are a little bit better. And so just like how the cleric has the more martial companion of the paladin, the wizard has a bit more of a martial companion of the bard, which is a weird way to think it, because in previous editions, mm-hmm. the bard was kind of a joke. Like, mm-hmm. it's like Tom Bombadil from Lord of the Rings. Like, you're like, you play a lute and walk around with us. Like, yeah, maybe you can get us free drinks at the tavern, but what do you do exactly for the party? They were a joke. And in 5th edition, they're so much better. Like, almost like you can tell they were overcompensating for something, where some people think that they might be overpowered. Mm-hmm. But I love playing them, not because they're overpowered, because they are so diverse, because they can cast some spells. And because they can even cast some spells that are traditionally seen as divine spells, as well as arcane spells. And they can wear some armor, and they have some discipline and training like a rogue does, and they can fight like a fighter a little bit. So they're a mixed bag. So I really love them for versatility. And then you have the warlock, which is a bit more an offshoot almost of like the sorcerer, if you want to think about it in these kind of like think of them like these hierarchies, mm-hmm. Of breaking them down, where they basically made a deal with a much, much more powerful entity, and now they have borrowed some of their power and they can use it. The way I described it to you was they are the magical sugar daddies, mm-hmm. right? So they are basically saying, listen, if you give me some of your power, I will do things for you. And that's represented by something called a pact. They've signed a document, or they have made a deal, and there's a representation of what that pact is, whether it's a book or an animal that stays with them called a familiar. Right. Mm-hmm. It could be a snake, or it could be a bird, or a crow, or an imp, a little demon, you know, or it can be a blade. Like, it's a magic weapon that kind of has ties back to this other creature. And that other creature, the patron, could be a fey creature. We talked about them a bunch. They mm-hmm. highly magical, very wild. It could be a celestial, like an angel that's like, take this sword and smite thine enemies, you know. It could be a demon. It could be a fiend, where very Faustian, which is where this idea comes from. Or it could be, even in the book it has this, in the player's handbook, the unknown, the forgotten, which it's just Cthulhu.
Okay.
It's Cthulhu. Like, let's not mince words, it's Cthulhu. And those have some really interesting abilities, and they have less magic, but the magic they do have is very powerful, and they have some really cool always-on powers, basically, called invocations, mm-hmm. that can let them just detect magic whenever they want, or they always do more damage with their sword, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't born with it, but they have found a way to conscript natural magical ability from somebody else. They're like adopted into natural magic. Thanks for equipping the compendium. You can get more information about the characters by listening to the full-length episode that's released after all the mini episodes are published. You can find all the links in the show notes, so you can spend less time learning D&D and more time playing.